Enjoying this episode of The Late Show Pod Show? Then head to cohst.app/lateshow or visit the link in the description to fill out our quick 2-minute survey all about getting to know you.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert.
Welcome back to The Late Show. Ladies and gentlemen, my guests tonight are Broadway legends with over 20 musicals under their belts. One of them wrote the scores for Cabaret and Chicago. The other one created In the Heights and Hamilton. Please welcome to The Late Show, Lin-Manuel Miranda and John Kander. John, thank you for being here. Lin, always a pleasure.
Sure.
Welcome back. Look at that. We don't get that every night. John Kander, Lin-Manuel Miranda, lovely to see both of you. You're both giants of the musical theater world. John, you've been at it just a little bit longer than Lin over there. How old are you now, sir?
96.
Born in 1927, then?
Yes, I was.
Oh, this theater was built in 1927. Yeah, you guys are twins.
I feel so much better now.
And when did Lin come on your radar?
I can remember that exactly. I went to see an off-Broadway production of In the Heights because a friend of mine was in it. I didn't know anything about him. And I saw this miracle on the stage. And I stayed behind to... I'm not a very aggressive person, but I did stay behind because I wanted to meet him and find out who was responsible for this.
Well, that's really true.
That's really true. And he invited me to lunch, and I was so scared because here I am eating lunch with the guy who wrote some of my favorite musicals. And we sat down around the corner from your house, and the first thing he said to me was, "Do you ever feel when you're writing a song like you have no idea what you're doing?" And that immediately like leveled the playing field, and then we just started talking about songwriting, and we're still talking about it 15 years later.
Right, and it's... It's funny, our series of luncheons were something that just sort of evolved. I learned a lot from him, and still am. And we became fast friends. And so here we are.
Here we are, inside the TV.
There it is. There you go. Well, so you guys started working together after those lunches, and now you're working on New York, New York. What is that about?
New York, New York is very... Well, it takes its name and the barest slivers of plot from the original Scorsese film starring Robert De Niro and Liza Minnelli, but it really is a love letter to New York City. It takes place just after World War II, and it's about musicians coming to the city, really citizens coming from all over the world to become themselves in New York. And the song that John so brilliantly writes is they're looking for their major chord, which is music, money, love. Not necessarily in that order.
let's talk about the title song. John, what do you remember about writing New York, New York? Because I know that the form of the song that we all know and love now is not the original form of the song.
Thank God.
I would agree. I've heard the original.
You have?
I have. I heard the Terry Gross interview. And I think you guys did a good job on that rewrite of that song. How did it come about?
Well, Fred and I...
Fred Ebb, your writing partner for so many years.
And I went down to play... We were assigned to write a score for a movie called New York, New York. that Martin Scorsese was directing, and Liza Minnelli and Robert De Niro were in. And we went down to Marty's office, and we played our score. I think there were 7, 8 songs, something like that. And he and Liza were very complimentary. And we started to go home, and over in the couch was somebody we hadn't met, and that was Robert De Niro.
Just like this.
And we saw, all we saw of him was an arm that went up. And Scorsese said, "Excuse me just a minute, De Niro wants to speak to me." And so he went over and sat at the couch with him. And then I saw two arms doing that. And then Scorsese came back, and in the most embarrassed way, said that De Niro feels that the title song, which is associated with him, is not as strong as The World Goes Round, which is associated with Liza's character. And he really could hardly get the words out. He said, "Would you guys mind going back and taking another crack at it?"
And how did you feel about that?
Oh, well, Freddie and I, in our politest stiffness, said, "Of course." And
of course they lied.
Anyway, we left and we went back to Freddie's apartment, and we were so pissed off. And that some actor was going to tell us.
Some actor, some Bobby D, somebody or other, yeah.
Anyhow, we went into Freddie's study, and in 45 minutes we wrote this other song that we now know as New York, New York. And we took it back, and they got to it and liked the song. And the point of it all is that De Niro was absolutely right. The original song we wrote was so embarrassing that today, actually, Sam Davis, who is our music coordinator, sneaked it into the underscoring.
Oh, so it's somewhere in this musical.
I'm not telling you where.
By the way, I think that's the secret of the song's success and why it's become a New York anthem is because they wrote it while they were a little pissed off. And I think every New Yorker is a little pissed off.
Who do you think you are? I'll show you greatness.
It has just a little you in it. A little bam, bam, bam in it.
Well, the line, if you can make it there, is, of course, one of the most famous lines from the song and the most famous things associated with New York now. Well, what is the moment you realized you had made it? Lynn, let's start with you.
I always say I'll never make a bigger leap in my life than going from substitute teacher at my old high school to Broadway composer, which was the leap I made when In the Heights made it from off-Broadway to Broadway. I was still subbing even when...
You weren't even a permanent teacher. You were just...
I relied on teachers at my old high school to get sick 5 times a month, and then I could pay my rent.
Wow.
So that was the biggest leap I'll ever take in my life. But I think the moment was kind of, I think the moment you realize you're a New Yorker is when you can walk into your bodega and they just start making the order. Because you're there every day. That's like...
Right, they know.
That's...
John, what's your sense of being a New Yorker, John? Do you have a thing that you associate with really being a New Yorker?
Yeah. Some of it, I think, is... I was saying in the other room something I didn't realize until today. I think I've always been a New Yorker, even when I was growing up in Kansas City.
What's that ineffable thing?
Okay, this is the substance of the show, really, and it's something I believe truly, deeply. I think that New York City is the greatest social experiment that the world has ever seen.
What are the elements of the experiment?
I think Everybody lives in New York, and everybody's natural enemy lives in New York. Truly.
Sure.
And the fact is, for the most part, they don't kill each other. And if you think of other big cities in the world, you think of London and all of the people from all over the world who live there, and the English. And in Paris, you think of all the people who live there from all over the world, and the French. In New York, there's only others. And the idea of that has moved me my whole life. And
when did you first come to New York?
I came to New York. My folks used to bring my brother and me here on spring vacation. And we would go to theater every night. And my brother would sit at one end of the row and I at the other, wisely. And and the lights would go down and we would instinctively lean forward and look at each other. I was in music and theater from the time I was a little kid. I just assumed that this is where I would live. And then at the end of the war, which I didn't kill anybody.
World War II, just so everybody knows, yeah.
Oh, my God, there have been that many wars.
There have been a few since, unfortunately, yeah.
When your ship came to New York, after wherever you had been, there were signs everywhere that said, "Welcome home, well done." And that could sound really corny to a lot of people today, but it wasn't the well done part. It was the welcome home. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cry a bit.
You say you've been writing since you were quite small. I want to get to what your first song was in just a moment. But Lynn, do you remember the first song you wrote?
I think it was "Into My Fisher Price Tape Recorder."
Oh.
It was called "The Garbage Pail Kids Are in Town."
Aha.
And it was about all the different Garbage Pail Kids, because I collected Garbage Pail Kids cards, and they were coming to town.
John, what was your first song? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was a Christmas carol that I wrote when I was in second grade.
Wow.
And I didn't find out until many years later that my second grade teacher, Miss Matthews, had called my folks and said, I just want to tell you that John wrote a Christmas carol. Is that all right? Because I know you're Jewish.
And what did your folks say? Was that okay?
That was fine with them. They tried to explain to me that there was more to it than that.
you wrote for so many years. You wrote with 40 years with your partner, Fred Ebb. What is it like to continue to compose and to create songs without him? What are the challenges and what are some of the discoveries that you've made?
After Freddie died in 2004, there were some leftover projects, which I vowed to finish. And I began to work with other people, with myself. And I think I found out that I couldn't not write. And that's really the whole secret. It's like a habit that you just can't get rid of. Mm-hmm. And I've been really, really lucky that I get to play in the sandbox with people like him. Yep.
Lynn, I know that you're inspired. I know that you've been inspired by John and Fred Ebb, and I understand that you wrote the song "The Room Where It Happens," extraordinary song from Hamilton, as a love letter to them. How so?
Yeah, that's my song in Hamilton that is my little hat nod to Candern Ebb. It's It's a very different style from the rest of it, because I was, and again, we've had many conversations about how we don't recognize our own styles. And so I told John this, and he said, what are you talking about? And the only real tell is at the end of that song. If you listen, it goes, you know, the great Leslie Odom Jr. sings, I wanna be in the room. And then he goes, click, boom, psh. And that is all that, that jazz, psh. That's a straight up all that jazz steal.
I hear it.
And that's my little love letter to John.
We have to take another break, but stick around. There's more Lin-Manuel Miranda and John Kander to come.
Here's the thing about eating. We all have to do it, sometimes even a few times a day. But if you already have a lot on your plate that isn't food, like stuff to do, figuring out your meals can be stressful. By the time you get breakfast going, it could be lunchtime. And then what? Eat your breakfast for lunch? Is that allowed? Yes, you're a grown-up who can make their own choices. And whether that choice is eating breakfast for every meal or bending to society's construct of proper mealtimes, you can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals that can be ready in as little as 2 minutes. Tailored to your schedule and weird eating habits, you have the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your cool new breakfast-only lifestyle. You can even try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus, if that's what you're into for breakfast. Or any meal. You do you. Head to factormeals.com/lateshow50 and use code lateshow50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code lateshow50 at factormeals.com/lateshow50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Late Show Poncho listeners can get 20% off on all Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise on ParamountShop.com. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show shirts, mugs, accessories, and more with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
John, who are some of your heroes? You're a hero of Lin-Manuel Miranda's. Who are some of your heroes when you were coming up and beginning to first create your music?
George Gershwin, Irving Berlin, Jerome Kern. Every generation has its own, not just musical heroes, but influences. And what really kind of dazzles me that when we work together is that we are separated by not just two generations, by three generations. And yet the actual process of writing and working is almost absurdly easy.
Yeah.
Really? Even though sometimes when you approach a start a song, you think, I don't know what I'm doing.
But you never know what
you're
doing.
Yeah, but we go there together.
Oh, that's nice. A lonely place to be alone.
Yeah.
What is that feeling like? What is that feeling like when you realize you've gone from not knowing to knowing something? How does that happen? What is that mysterious moment when the blank page turns into not an accusation, but a possibility?
We talk about that all the time, actually.
In the first place, you never know much. You really don't. But something begins to happen, and if you're working with another person, you begin to pile idea on idea. And it's an adventure, and if you don't put some god up there telling you that's no good, you can go ahead and just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and his hands are really fast. It's like, you know, a lot of what writing is to us is us just eating bagels and talking about what's on TV. And then at a certain point, we'll turn to the piano and we'll talk about the idea we have. His hands will start going, and I'll just start trying to write words to keep up with what's coming out of his hands. And the first song we wrote together, which is the opening number of New York, New York, we wrote in about an hour and 15 minutes. And there's a moment, I actually filmed us singing through it for the first time, and there's this moment where you just kind of look at each other like, this exists now.
I think that... He just said something really important that I think that a lot of people don't understand with people who make art, if you will. one of the great things about making stuff is something is there that was not there before. And I can't tell you what an ego trip that is.
Don, thank you so much for being here. It's lovely to talk to you. Lynn, as always.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wild Card, wherever you get your podcasts. Only from NPR.
Hi, I'm Jordana Abraham.
And I'm Dr. Naomi Bernstein.
And we want to tell you about Calm the F*** Down, a guided meditation series from the Oversharing podcast. This is something we've been planning for a long time. It's our most requested segment from the podcast. And these meditations are going to be between 5 and 10 minutes. They're going to be super quick because we don't have a lot of time. You're going to be so surprised how 5 to 10 minutes of really thoughtful meditations can transform your whole life. In addition to the first 4 meditations available at launch, we'll be doing 2 new meditations every single month. Plus, for the fans of Oversharing Podcast out there, you'll also get ad-free versions of every episode of the Oversharing Podcast.
So if somebody wants to become a subscriber, how do they join?
It's so easy. You just go to subscribe.betches.com and sign up now for only $4.99 a month. Or you can lock in our discounted rate if you sign up for the whole year. That's subscribe.betches.com. Or if you're in the Apple Podcasts app, you can just hit the subscribe button now and sign up in the app. It's as easy as that.